Hello, everybody. This is Stu Smith with the Tactical Fitness Report, and I have a new face to our Tactical Fitness Report today. Is Pat Bonus out of Connecticut, and he is he's also a Heroes of Tomorrow trainer. So if you go on to the StuSmith.com page, look at the very top, you'll see in red letters, free workouts. Scroll down, and you'll see how to contact them if you're in that area. So how I met Patrick is he came down with a bunch of guys and did a Spec Ops triathlon with us, earned that cool patch there. I think he did the Devil's Mile with us, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I still have a few more. We'll do those again. That was a classic Spec Ops try with a Devil's Mile in the middle. But anyway, you know, it's hard to find people who want to, you know, train, you know, future tactical athletes for free. And Patrick is one of our guys that does that. So he doesn't receive any money from me, from the guys, maybe a gift every now and then from somebody or a plaque from me. That's about it. But you know, it's not because of the money. You know, we do it because one, we love to train and we would be training anyways, you know, by ourselves. It gives us an opportunity to, you know, work harder for ourselves, but also show some people, you know, through our experiences, you know, what, you know, proper training is all about. So, that is Patrick right there. So he has come up with this, a neat way of explaining everything that we talk about. We talk about overload principle. We talk about trying to get off of plateaus. If you're stuck on a plateau, whether it's running or stuck at 10 pull-ups or, you know, swimming, you know, whatever physical ability that you are testing, you know, sometimes you get on these plateaus and how to get off of them. And he's actually mixed in some really neat math and science with the process. And without going too much into it, I'm going to let you explain what you told me yesterday, because I really like it. I wanted to have you on almost immediately after you told me about it, because I think it does, it will resonate with our group.
Okay. Yeah. It's called the sigmoid function. Yeah. And it's not a new concept, but it's not, I guess I've looked at it. I spoke with my friend who's a PhD from Caltech who, you know, jumped off and crazy, you know, mathematics and science, but I haven't really seen it directed towards training as much, or weight loss, or weight gain, or getting off those plateaus. You know, when you've been training, or you get up to that point where you're going for a PST, you know, and right, you start hammering for the PST, and then wait, maybe a PST gets delayed, maybe a waiver needs to come, right? So then, do you keep going on that? And so, you know, I'll draw a picture just to give you an idea, because the sigmoid function, when you look at it, it always starts off with kind of slow progress, slow gains, and then it rapidly increases, and you get that really nice, you know, increase, and gains are coming, and then all of a sudden those gains slow. And so, you know, when you start a new program or anything, there's always going to be those transitions of soreness and getting into the routine. And then if you push through that and, you know, you understand that's part of it. I mean, you and I have trained for so long that we understand that new programs are going to kick up that soreness, or,
right,
you know, the times, you know, standing on the edge of the pool when it's cold in the morning, you know. And then you go through a period of feeling really good, really good. And then, you know, you get back almost to that point of standing on the edge of the pool. Like, I've been doing this for so long, or, you know, my shoulders are sore from too much swimming. So here, I'll draw a quick picture here. You know, just to give an idea, and I don't need to put necessarily anything other than kind of the way the curve goes. And I think what it will do is it'll start to highlight exactly.
Okay. Hey, real quick, where in mathematics is this mostly used?
Well, it's often used for the most part in population growth.
Okay. So more like an economics type of thing, but population, statistics.
Yeah. And they'll use it in, really, it's deemed a logistics function. So, you know, anywhere where you're going from a negative number to a positive number, or zero to one, is often what they use. And so it, you know, the numbers and things like that can vary again, but this is essentially what the sigmoid curve looks like. Can you see that?
That's very good. Nice drawing. It's an S curve, basically.
Exactly. So what I'll do is I'll draw a circle at the bottom and a circle at the top. And the circle at the bottom and the circle at the top can often appear similar to slow gains, you know, slow progress. And then again, up at the top, there's that slow gain, that slow progress. But in the middle, you know, you see a real, real right in here. You see that real rapid incline. And, you know, based on where you started, you right. know, so if you're overweight, let's say you're basically at a negative number, right? Cause you're well overweight. Right.
Right.
And so you basically can get to zero, but you really want to get below, say, an average weight. You know, if you're 40 pounds overweight, you don't really want to just drop 40 pounds. You're probably going to want to drop a little bit more, right?
Right. Yeah, so, you don't want to be at that minimum standard for height weights.
Exactly.
Right? Just because 220 allows you into the military doesn't mean you need to be at 220 if you're right. at 260, right?
Exactly.
A little bit lower. Yeah, good point.
Exactly. And so, you know, I think what you often do, you know, with your guys is like, you know, I talked with one of my trainees who he was kind of, I wasn't trying to be a jerk, but I was like, you don't want to go for the minimum standard.
No.
You don't want eight pull-ups. Yeah. Like, just because you're getting eight pull-ups, I'm sorry. That's just not, you want to wow them. You want to make your money where you can make your money.
It's your job interview.
Exactly.
PST is your job interview.
100%. And so, you know, where he got to, let's say, I'll draw another curve here. Where he got to, I'll circle it, you know, I'll try to keep, actually, I'll put an asterisk on it. Where he got to about here on this asterisk right there. See where that asterisk is?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Well, he got there. And what you really need to do now is you need to start another curve that is similar. And then that way you jump off it, right? And so now where that asterisk is, you see here where I'm going to circle, it's similar. It's not going great. You know, maybe you're still staying at eight. You know, maybe you're getting a little soreness or whatever. But maybe what you did is you threw in a weight vest, right?
Yep.
Or, you know, one thing that I really like that you did was years ago, you did the variated pull-ups or the,
right.
you know, and I was forging, you know, hammering with a 5-pound sledge and doing a lot of pull-ups with the guys. And I got a little tendonitis. So I thought, you know what? I know. All right. I've hit a wall here. You know, I'm icing and I'm, you know, rolling it out. Well, what did I do? I just threw in, you know, those four different variations of pull-ups.
Right. Different grips.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I stayed doing 100 pull-ups with that variation and it went away. So I didn't stop training.
Right.
Right. And there was like, you know, a little bit of a rough, you know, patch where it was working out, but then, you know, I got to that point. So, you know, I think when you're doing when you're looking at the sigmoid function, you know, and you're thinking about say weight loss or weight gain for that matter, you start at that, you know, like I said, it may be not a negative number, but you're overweight and people were getting into it slow going, you know, it's not happening great, you know, and then all of a sudden they start to increase slowly the minutes, you know, that they're on the bike or on the treadmill and they start to see some weight loss. And right. you always hear people like, oh, I lost 8 pounds and then I stopped. Because what they don't know is that you got to kind of go back to the beginning. Well, what weight were you when you started?
Right.
So your basal metabolic rate was higher there. Yeah. Now your basal metabolic rate is lower, right? And I don't want to get into the science sure. of it and blur it, but you know, that's where you stagnate too, is because now you're increasing, you've gotten through that, you're doing more time on the bike, but you may be taking in the same amount of calories, even that right. base, you know, where you actually have to look at lowering just your base calories,
right.
not even determinant on your energy level.
Hey, let's real quick, take a look at that curve again. And
yeah.
what is, let's kind of determine the x-axis, right? X-axis is obviously time.
Yeah.
Right. So we're looking at time.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, it's relative. It depends on what you are doing and when you feel like you hit this plateau. Obviously, you know, it won't be the same for everybody. This may be, this is obviously weeks versus days, right? So you got to put some time into this training. You know, one thing I got to tell you, I get some really crazy emails sometimes. And like a guy started my 12-week program, you know, 12 weeks to Buds, 12-week program. And, you know, sends me an email and says, you know, I'm not doing so well. I'm not sure what's wrong. And then I said, well, what week are you on? He goes, well, I just finished week one, right? And all my scores are worse, right? I said, well, you're just in that overload principle right now, and you're just probably a little bit sore, battling all these things. So it's, you know, things like that happen often. You know, but at the same time, if you're only a week into a program, you're not even into a program yet. You know what I mean? You got to put 3, 4, 5 weeks, and then you see, okay, now your body's starting to make those adjustments and it starts going up the curve. You know, that's really kind of the reason why I make most of my workouts between 8 and 12 weeks long.
Yeah.
Because I find 12 weeks to be really good because – here's why. Usually by 8 or 9, you hit that peak and you're kind of burning out almost, right? So what I tend to do when I make a 12-week plan is I'll make weeks 9, 10, 11 kind of taper down on the intensity side a little bit. And then we test after a couple of weeks of moderate activity, and then they see their score shoot up. So it's just a little active recovery thrown in there. So I tend to make more of a sine curve, you know, with my things more than the S curve. But it really is the same thing. You know, it just goes up, and then sometimes you plateau at week 5. Yeah. Well, if you find that you're plateauing, either keep going with the program, or if you're feeling like you're really burnt out, drop it down a notch, right? Just for a week. Give yourself some recovery, and then you'll see that you might be on that plateau. There's so many different things I think you can do to kind of get off a plateau. One, you've already mentioned it, change it up a notch. You know, do you put on a weight vest with the calisthenics? Do you, you know, add more volume? Do you add less volume? You know, you can add some speed to it. You know, maybe some eccentric type speed work, you know, when you're really kind of sprinting on the ups, or definitely, you know, depending on what exercise you're doing, sprint on the exertion phase, you know, and then bring it down real slow on the concentric phase. Let's see, that's just with more strength stuff and muscle endurance. With running, you could do the same thing, maybe add some resistance running. Change it up, maybe,
or interval work.
Interval work,
like you said, speed work, doing mile intervals, but doing 6 of them rather than running a straight 6.
Oh, absolutely. I think that is more beneficial to getting off a plateau than trying to run just a long, slow distance run.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's interesting that you said that sine curve, because when I initially thought of it, that tapering like swimmers do, you know, or when, you know, I had my my PJ guy who's a beast. He was going for his PST, and push-ups were his problem. You look at this kid who's just so big. Well, it was a simple fix of just putting his elbows a little closer to his body. They're way out, so they're putting too much stress on his shoulders.
Right.
But what we did was we did a similar program. I think you have it, you know, 200 push-ups a day for 10 days or whatever. But there's a key element to that, too, is that you taper.
Yeah.
You know, you have a three-day recovery.
Yeah.
A three-day recovery. So that's, you know, essentially that's kind of going back to, you know, whether it's going down or you kind of start on that dip before you're going up again, right? You know, you're basically going from, you know, 200 push-ups, 300 push-ups, you know, 100, 200 pull-ups, whatever it may be a day, to nothing.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing, as you know. You get kind of agitated, itchy, I'm feeling unproductive. But that taper is hugely important. And, you know, so that circled on the sigmoid curve too could be, you know, whether you're going down, that's that's an intentional decline.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when they talk about it in business and things like that, they basically want to say, you don't want to get on that decline, because then it's going to be hard, you know, but that's a business level.
Right.
Whereas if you are really programming in that taper, that recovery period of, you know, whatever it may be, cold soaks, rollers, buffers, right?
Yeah.
Car buffers.
Yeah, I love it.
So, you know, it's definitely one of those things that, you know, where you're, you know, like you talked about periodization. I think it's important too. You know, you talked about 8 or 12 week programs where, you know, if I plan a 6 week program for someone, I know they're going to get another six week program. So it's really a 12 week program. They're just
absolutely they're just getting it in blocks of six, which is fine. But that six is a perfect time because it allows you as a trainer and as the student to kind of assess what you need next, right?
Right.
Because that there may be a section right there at week six where I'm like, all right, I can handle a lot more than this volume. So you bump it up a notch. Or, you know, you're starting to see your scores drop. So now let's do a little taper here and then bump it up a notch, you know, and reassess. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and this, you know, it's nothing that I've done, but I get text messages after the PSTs from these kids, which is the coolest thing ever, as you know, like, and I'm just waiting to hear, I crushed it. That's what I always want to hear, you know, and I get this text message, you know, from different guys. I was the only one out of six that passed, you know what I mean? And you know what, the proof is in the pudding of these kids. I almost always constantly tell them to be tapered, you know, before, be ready to, you know, be fully rested, fully engaged. So you're really you're not even plateaued. You're at the top of that curve.
Yep.
And then what you're basically going to do is your next even mini kind of curve up is your PST. Like you said, your job interview and you go hammer it. And that's, you know, the kids often too, they're like, oh, I want to go for a swim. I want to go for a run now because my PST wasn't that much. I'm like, no. That's, you know, that's what you did. That was your performance right there. That was your game time. That was your competition. And you have to understand that. You know, you often want to train harder than you play, or longer. Not harder, but longer oftentimes. You want to put more intensity into your training than into your game time situation, right? And so I always look at that and say, you really just hit that curve at its peak.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I heard a really cool quote yesterday, and it was train like you've never succeeded and perform like you've never lost.
That's awesome. I love it. I love it. You know, it's that, you know, but it's also that when you're, you know, it's within this curve too. And when you're training, it's interesting that you say that because it is so much a mindset.
Yeah. Right.
You know, when you're young, you know, it's like, you know, and I fell victim to it as well, Stu. You know, I was 240 pounds. I thought bigger was better.
Yeah.
You know, and then I got on the bike. And when I got on the bike literally was breaking. You know, the bike was breaking. My hips were hurting, all this sort of stuff. And had I quit on it, you know, I drove the guy at the bike shop nuts. But if I had quit in all those breakdowns and all those, you know, things, then I would have never dropped the weight that I wanted to drop. And so I think as you get older, that's the mental component, and the quotes and the readings and all that stuff are so much a part of, okay, the biggest thing too is in business, in anything, is when do you get off of that plateau? When do you like put on a parachute and jump? Or if you go too far and don't put the parachute on, you're just going to fall off the cliff with no support, with no, you know, nothing good about it.
Right.
Or where do you get the ladder to go even higher? And I think that's a very, you know, seasoned athlete, someone who's trained, anyone who has the level of, you know, injuries. You know, I know you've sustained some injuries, right?
Yep.
And you start to learn that your body will heal, that you don't just throw in the towel, you know.
And you work around them. You know, like I sprained my ankle Wednesday, did an aggressive, you know, ice warm therapy for a couple of days, was able to start swimming without kicking on Friday, but I still did upper body, you know, I mean, I just limped around the gym a little bit and didn't run that day. I was able to ride the bike, you know, so, you know, it is what it is. I mean, you just work around it, you know, when you don't stop training, like you said, you know,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So whether you're on that plateau or whether you're, you know, like an injury has created that plateau or that, you know, what it's exactly like you said, that you have to have that human barometer of what do I do now? Where do I go next? Yeah. You know, like, and you know, after your years of training and things like that, you still have to go. And, you know, for you, it's a personal thing, but when you were in the teams, there are times where you had to go. Like,
yeah, broken or not. Yeah. Well, it's the same way with sports. You know, I would sprain my ankle on a Wednesday at practice and I'd be playing Friday nights, you know, and I'd tape it and go. And, you know, you just learn to play with pain. That's why I think, you know, athletics is a great, pre-training for any of these tactical professions. One, you learn how to be a team player. Two, you learn how to play with pain, you know, and it's all mission oriented. You know, these workouts and games, you know, it's you're moving a ball down the field, you know, and you have a leader and you have followers and you come together as a team to make it happen. I mean, that's exactly what the military is.
Okay.
You know, so yeah, I mean, I know I kind of digressed for a second there, but I'm a big fan of, you know, learning from some of these things that people don't even know that they are training for their future, you know, by doing some of these things. And like some of the things that you do with the school where you teach, you know, some of your outdoor stuff. I mean, that's invaluable skills.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, we quite literally, you know, I'm planning my trip out west, and we literally go on an upward curve, very steep upward curve.
Yeah.
You know, and they have to learn that it's going to start off rough. You know, adjusting and acclimatizing to altitude is a rough go for some people. Yeah. And you can be the fittest athlete at sea level, and then you get to 10,000, 12,000, 14,000 feet, and you know, you could be vomiting, your head's hurting, and you have to learn to deal with it. But also too, there, you know, it's really interesting because, you know, when you're talking about the sigmoid function, for me, it shows like, wow, you know, if that guy who was in week one, who was like, I'm not doing so hot, and he looks at the sigmoid curve, okay, yeah, that's the period of no gains. That's the period of like real slow progress. And when I take the kids up to 12.5 on the acclimatization day, they're like, wow, we're, you know, up pretty high. We're at this bulkhead. We have lunch and we come down. And almost every year, the kids are, we could make it to the top. I'm like, all right, slow down there. And so we go back down to camp and, you know, we go in town, we get some food. The next day when we go for the summit, we get to 12.5, 13, where the bulkhead is there. Wow, we got here really fast. And they feel really good. The push to 14, 440, which is the summit, is a slog. Is hard. So they basically get back to that point of like, wow, you know, we're back on that struggle
plateau. Right. That's a really good analogy there, because that is the curve it, you know, personified.
Yeah. And, you know, and they really, really learn how that the struggle, yes, altitude is making you struggle, but so much of the struggle is within. Like what is willing you to take more steps up? You know, and that's one of the reasons why I love nature. I mean, I surfed in a hurricane one time and I didn't surf. Like I didn't ride a wave.
Yeah.
I saw a harbor seal and I had a great time, but I got my butt kicked for an hour, hour and a half.
Yeah. Sometimes just getting out there in a hurricane is hard enough.
Well, yeah, you know, and not knowing the beach that well, not knowing that it was a closeout and, you know, and things like that. But what it really was is I walked away from the ocean smiling, you know, that, wow, like you have no emotion, you have no feeling. And I just really was at the bottom of that curve. You know, yeah. I was so at the bottom of that curve so many times, you know, just getting in that spin cycle. And I walked away, you know, again, you know, going off and trying to make sure that, you know, if you look at nature it, with that, you know, whenever you're adjusting, you know, your first night out, you usually don't sleep well. It's new sounds, it's new things. And then all of a sudden you get comfortable. And then you get back to that curve again and you want your mattress. You know, you want your hot water. And right. So, you know, I think that I really to draw parallels all the way across the board. And the reason why I want to talk to you about it is that I think it's awesome that you mentioned that guy who was not doing well week one. because I think that really shows where people need to look at this curve.
Well, I mean, I will say this. When people do my 12-week program, you know, I usually have a PST on day one, and the next one's on week four, right? Typically, guys do okay, you know, not much growth in that period of time, but then they have it really peaks. I think I have another one on week seven, right? But then their scores are usually worse, right? Because they've just burned out. I've burned them out pretty hard for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Then they test, you know, after a couple of week taper, and they're so much better, right? Yep. After they finish the whole 12 weeks and they come around again to week one and test again, they're at their best, right? So it really is. It starts off, you know, like you do, gets here, right? But I know I need to get them off of there.
Yeah.
So I drop them a notch, and then they boom up to here.
Yep.
And then we come back down and test even better. So
yeah. And in the way that's, you know, like we said, that tapering, that intentional decrease, you know, business wouldn't want to do that. Business wouldn't want to take a loss for a period of time, right? Yeah. So they got to expedite, and they have to have a better barometer when to jump off. You know, they want to basically get to their peak and then, you know, have the shortest period of time. But, you know, when I was training hockey players specifically, and I was so fortunate that some of those guys left. It had nothing to do with me. You know, the training that I was doing a lot of things called knee fallouts. I was doing a lot of internal, external rotation. So the weak points in hockey players are hips and shoulders, and doing a lot of that. And the biggest thing is some of those guys jumped off to really great hockey careers, and that's awesome. But the best thing was in their senior season, where that was their job interview to colleges and things like that, there were no shoulder or hip injuries. I had no groin, no shoulder injuries in those hockey players. And that was something that I was very, very happy to see in these kids. Yeah. Is that the you know, knee fallouts and internal, external rotations are that real slow going, like, you know, you're not getting jacked from it. You're not seeing noticeable gains.
Right.
You know, you're not going to the beach and flexing your rotator cuff muscles, right? You know, and, you know, like, so, you know, young men tend not to want to stick to those. But the gains are really in the season where they're not injured.
Right.
You know? And then when they leave that season again, you know, they have to get back to that, you know, and again, they should really take a period of 2 weeks off after a hard season and things like that, you know, to let joints recover. But, you know, the interesting thing is too, is that I saw in those programs, I never knew what they did over summer. I never knew, you know, were they just doing, you know, curls and, you know, some squats and, you know, maybe some shrugs
or nothing.
Sure. And so the first week was always just a, you know, get used to the movements with no expectation at all. And then week two, after you're, you know, working out the soreness, you know, now let's start to ramp it up and, you know, really ramp it up, just like the curve, ramp it up, ramp it up, ramp it up. And then when we get right about here and the weights are kind of easy and we've kind of stagnated or become complacent, guess what? We got new movements that are working the same muscles, but they're dynamic and they're different.
Yeah, you know? I love it. I've written a couple of articles about pushing yourself off the plateau, and that's exactly what we do. You know, you just change something up. You know, I remember I had a guy, one of the first persons I ever trained other than military students. It was this priest. He was 50 years old, 52 years old, and wanted to join the Navy as a chaplain. And he was 280 pounds. Right. And had to get down to 200. Right. And so every time we hit one of those little plateaus, if we went a week and didn't lose a pound, we just changed it up, add something else. It might've been, you know, instead of, you know, we kept everything the same, but we added something. Right. So it just bumped it up a notch because, you know, his was a little bit different. We just had to increase his metabolic rate a little bit, you know, because he was getting used to it. And then, you know, we were monitoring food and everything. And sure enough, boom, we'd add swimming to the workout routine, and we'd add elliptical or biking or rowing or something like that, you know, along with the walking routine that we were doing. We'd add more calisthenics and higher rep, you know, whatever. And it was just a great transition, you know, the entire way. And in course of, about 10 months, he lost 80 pounds. It was a perfect curve, you know, and it was, you know, he was right on that phase of like 8 pounds. Like his first couple of months went real well because he had so much weight to lose. So with a weight loss thing, you know, that curve is a little bit different because you just have so much to lose right at first. It's a shorter flat line at the beginning, but it can be a much longer plateau, you know, if you don't make that change.
And that's at the beginning, is that's exactly what I was talking about. And, you know, basal metabolic rate is what, and that I can try to simplify it. And that's what you need to take in just to breathe and, you know, have your heart beat and your brain function with no activity. Just
typically you and I are going to burn probably 1800 calories a day just living.
Exactly. And that's it. That's if we sit in our chair or at our desk all day.
Right.
And that's, see, that's where people, you know, when they're, and I mean, there's no judgment here, but you know, you're drinking a bunch of culottas and you walk out to a car that started in the garage, you ride to a parking garage, get in an elevator and sit in a cubicle for 8 hours. And you're eating, you know, ham and egg sandwiches. You're eating these hugely, hugely caloric meals, but you're not putting out anything.
Right.
And then what happens is if you're at 280 pounds, you know, that person compared to us is going to need probably close to 3000 calories just to, you know, get all the blood out to the extremities. Right.
Right.
And so once you've lost, you know, that 8, 10, even maybe 20 pounds, when they have that much to lose, they have to look at, well, I don't need that 3000 calories anymore. And I think sometimes that plateau happens because, you know, you see cyclists as well. I've seen so many cyclists, when they retire, gain massive amounts of weight because
they're still eating like they were working out.
They're still eating the 10,000 calories a day, like they're, you know, climbing up Alpe d'Huez, you know, doing hill repeats.
Yeah.
And so that's the similar kind of, you know, kind of effect on, you know, weight gain where they're
football players too. Football players are horrible at that. You know, like retired football players, they will either do one or two things. They will stop eating because they had to be so big that they had to eat to lose weight. I've seen linemen lose 80 pounds in a year just by not eating like a football player anymore. Yeah. Or let's say they were a different position. They were like 220, but they're still eating like they were playing football. And now they're going to be 250, 260, you know, within a year, you know.
Well, I remember two examples perfect were Tony Siragusa.
Yep.
He dropped a ton of weight. And then Jerome Bettis, when he retired right away, the bus, he gained a lot of weight because when he was playing, that was his kind of, I'll run through the line. I'll run through the guys. And so, you know, and those are two perfect examples of, you know, basically going in that kind of the direction of, you know, how are we going to maintain this or how are we going to, you know, get started. And, you know, for so many people, there's a level of, you know, the mental state of, I don't ever want to be small, you know, so that initial, you know, in the curve, that initial start is like, I don't want to be scrawny. I don't want to be skinny, you know? And so, you know, or for someone else, I don't want to gain too much mass. You know, I hear swimmers all the time. I don't want to get stiff. I don't want to do too much dry land, you know? And so, you know, that's another thing with swimming that I've found is that, you know, you see people come into the pool and they'll swim their laps. You know, they'll get into that routine of, well, I'm not losing weight. I'm swimming, you know, 30 laps. I'm swimming a 1500 every day.
Yeah.
What they're not doing is they're not throwing in 50 sprints. They're not throwing in 100 sprints because they're not increasing their heart rate. They're not increasing that fat burn. They get into a nice, you know, easy. And hey, I give them all the credit in the world.
Hey, they're moving. And they're staying healthy. They just may not be achieving some of the goals that they're trying to do.
And that's what I mean. They're not losing the weight because they're not incorporating that, you know, that increased rate. You know, they're staying down at the bottom of that curve.
Right.
And so again, yeah. And
100%. Or they were former competitive swimmers who used to swim 10,000 meters a day and eat 10,000 calories a day, you know, and now they're still eating like that, you know, and they're still gaining weight while they're working out, but they're swimming considerably less, you know,
100%.
So, you know, but anyway, so yeah, we, I agree. I mean, I really like this way of kind of putting it on paper for people to kind of see, you know, where they are in their training, and just, and obviously just to kind of logically understand, you know, your first few weeks of a training program, you know, should be exciting. You know, they should be exciting for you. You're doing stuff new. You're going to be sore, you know, but don't expect results overnight. You know, that's where patience comes in. We talk about patience all the time where, you know, you got to be patient with the program, give it 3 or 4 weeks, and then you're going to start seeing things rise, you know, in the right direction for you. I mean, every now and then, you know, if you've kind of come into it at a moderate fitness level, maybe maintain some basics, you can come in and start seeing results a lot quicker compared to someone who maybe just be starting and now has to get over the soreness process for a couple of weeks and then start growing.
Yep.
So,
Yeah. And I've seen that with guys that, you know, like I said, the guy who had the push-up issue just move his elbows in versus a guy who did not really have a life of fitness, you know, and so he was just getting used to exercising every day. And his lower part of the curve was much longer.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the other guys, he started that increase very, very quickly.
Yeah.
You know, and he was the guy who was quit swimming, was like, I don't want to be this skinny ripped kid anymore. So he put on some mass, but we shed that real quick. And we said, you know, when you're going to go PJ, they're going to want you lean and mean, and they're going to want you functional, and they're going to want you to be able to be in these different, you know, these realms. But again, it jumped out at me as this, you know, for anyone who's mathematical, anyone who's logical, some people really like, you know, they like daily journals. They like the stats. They like the data. Well, you know what? I'd be very interested to see if anyone is doing a sigmoid curve based on time, you know, and then if you add this here, and this could be anything. So put in time versus growth. So here, I don't know if you can see that.
Yeah, we can see it.
Yep. So you put in time and then growth, and whatever growth is,
Could be faster runs, could be more reps, could be weight loss, opposite of growth, but yeah.
Right, but it's still that's your growth. That's your desired goal of, you know, that it isn't the literal term.
Yeah. Or you could flip it upside down for weight loss.
There you go.
Started at a weight, right? Put it at 240, right? Yeah. So 0 to 240. So that's pounds.
Yeah.
Right. So like 240 at the top, and then just bring it down, you know, to your zero, whatever your zero is.
Yeah. Well, that's like a position time graph where in physics where you're doing position versus time. But yeah. It's the same thing, but your essentially starting point and basically your weight is going to decline.
Right.
You know, so it's basically going to just look something like that.
Oh, yeah. Or actually, what I was meaning was this. Sorry to contradict you. What I'm talking about is make it look like this. So it's like an inverse curve. So here you're at 240 and your goal down here is 200, right? So it looks more like that.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that's actually how a position time graph.
Yeah.
That's exactly what a position time graph. I was
right.
Not a contradiction, more as a, you know, I was trying to stay with the sigmoid curve where, you know, that when you come down that way, you know, I always look at that as a position time graph of where you're starting.
There you go.
And where you're finishing.
Got it.
But again, it's so logical too that you can hash out those things and where they put in the data, you know, depending on if they want to gain, if they want to lose, you know, if they want to set a certain, you know, specific goal, you have it right there, and it's awesome. And they can also go back to it in terms of, you know, they're doing it week by week. And they can really look at, okay, well here, you know, I was really, you know, Thursday, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I was jamming, you know, I was really jamming on it. And so they can really do that week by week. But, you know, again, I think that you can make a lot of parallels You know, like we're obviously talking about fitness and, you know, making gains going in that direction. But, you know, I don't see why you couldn't use it for any other thing in your life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've already made some, you know, comparisons with just your comfort zone in the, you know, in the woods when you're camping at, you know, at elevation. You know, that was a good one. You can do the same thing for your comfort zone in the water, cold water.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, eventually it just becomes, all right, I'm this sucks. And, you know, but anyway, you know, so in closing, I like to say thanks for introducing this idea, not only in, you know, for our guys that really like to involve science with their training, but also just, you know, making sure that people just understand it's a process of growth requires, you know, some patience with the program, and then you're going to see big results pretty quickly, and then expect a somewhat of a tapering a little bit. You're going to plateau a little, but then you do one of two things. You change the program up somehow to get yourself back up on a upward swing, or you do a little downslope for a week or two to recover because you're burnt out, and then you get back up on that upward swing again.
Yeah. You know, and thanks for, you know, taking the time this morning. I know you're super busy with all that you do. And
oh man, that's cool. This is great. When you called me yesterday and told me about it, I'm like, yeah, let's do that. That's awesome.
Right. So, well, hey, I'm going to probably go jump in the water for a little bit. And because, you know, you get your 6 a.m. workout in, I'll get my mid-morning workout in.
Hey, but nothing wrong with that. Get it done when you can get it done.
All right, man. Well, I appreciate all your time, and have a great rest of your day.
All right, man. Hey, thank you very much, Pat. And like I said, if you guys are in the Connecticut area, check out the stewsmith.com website, free workouts link, and you'll find Patrick's contact information, and you know, might be able to join him on some workouts when he does them throughout the week and on the weekends.
All right. So, thanks, Stu.
All right, man. Thank you.